Thanks for attending today. I appreciate it. Before I begin, I'm going to be talking about some of recent influences on various soil factors and how they relate to our Solvita CO2 burst respiration test. Before I begin, how many folks are familiar with Solvita CO2 respiration? Well, great. And how many of you actually have used it either in the field or with your local lab? Okay, well, good. So I don't need to explain it quite as much detail. Solvita's been around for almost 20 years now. Dr. Brenton developed it along with some other folks back in the early 90s. He developed it and patented it, patented in 96. Began as a field moist sample put into a jar with the patented gel probe, which basically absorbs CO2 from the soil. At the end of 24-hour incubation period at room temperature, you can then read the CO2 respiration in parts per million using a color chart, or most recently we've got some digital color readers that we're using, which are more precise, more accurate. This was adapted by laboratories around the world. We currently have like 40 to 50 laboratories throughout the world using this CO2 respiration technique. When we went to the laboratory technique, we lost this field moist capability, and now we use the conventional drying and sieving, just like chemistry analysis. Again, the method was developed to obtain a rapid rewetting of soil, which simulates the rainfall event on your crop soil. And we started out using the capillary attraction method to rewet the soil after it was dried and ground. The rewetting of the soil, which is typically less than 5%, simulates the birch effect, if any of you are familiar with birch, and we call it the CO2 burst method. One of the issues that we've recently come across in the last year or two is, you know, we've got labs in a proficiency sampling arena that have seen some variation in the burst respiration result, which was not typical of all of our work. So we were concerned that there's something going on to create the variation. So in the last year, we've started some technical studies of what could possibly create the variation from lab to lab. Structured soils, you know, in the left image, they re-moisten well in the field. The same exact soil or unstructured soil tends to oversaturate, and primarily that's really, related to the particle size and the capillary attraction. The real problem with oversaturation is that it's 2 to 3-fold less soil, soil respiration. And obviously for our laboratory folks, we want it to be reproducible across the board and consistently reproducible for the lab CO2. So we've started three trials. Actually, we've completed two of the trials, and we've got one that's ongoing to understand what impacts the oversaturation of the soils. Obviously, in most labs, everybody has their standard soil processing procedures. We have a soil grinder, which you'll see up there, Midwest Labs. That's a photo of their soil in input processing. Everyone handles the soil the same way, dried overnight, usually at 40 degrees, and then processed through a variety of hammer mills or grinders. Typically, what we're finding, one of the issues that we'll discuss here, is that some of the soil proficiency program samples appear to be overground rather than just your standard laboratory grind. We're finding that, in fact, most of the particles end up being less than 1 millimeter. And again, this ends up being part of the problem of the inconsistent respiration across the laboratories. The like I already stated, the rewetting mimics a natural drying and rewetting effect. The real issue, though, with the oversaturation is that the excessive wetting or oversaturation of soils reduces the oxygen availability and therefore reduces the CO2 respiration. How the soils are handled certainly affects the aggregate structure as well as wettability. We've also developed a new aggregate stability method to actually measure and develop a process to measure aggregate stability. That's a different talk. But the premise is uneven wetting of the proficiency soils, and actually we also see the oversaturation in very fine grain unprocessed soils creates the underreporting of respiration, which obviously affects part of the soil health tool, which CO2 respiration is a key component of. But equally important, or maybe more important, is the fact that it also is lowers the nutrient mineralization capability that growers and farmers are looking to find. So our observations on structured soil may result both naturally and from processing. The grinding and the pulverization and sieving certainly can disrupt the natural aggregates, which has a role in the oversaturation. The fine milling of soils, as we've been told, is considered advantageous for better performance. Obviously, I come from the environmental business, so I was always looking for maximum extraction of compounds. In agricultural soils, the chemistry end of it, you're also looking to extract the nutrients from your soils. That isn't necessarily the same process that we need to be following for biological measurement of soils. We're not trying to extract microbes. So I think what we're seeing is we need a slightly different mind shift when we're measuring biological properties versus chemical properties. And obviously, with the advent and increase in soil health testing, it's important that the soil biology is measured accurately and reproducibly. So our first study, we took some of the ALP soils that we receive routinely, and first we put them through a sieve analysis. And as soon as we looked at the sieve analysis results, we started to see the light bulb came on, and the picture started to become a little bit clearer. As you can see here, we've got five soils from Nebraska through Iowa, Idaho, and Texas. Our soil fraction analysis shows that anywhere from 80 to 90% were less than 5 millimeter particle size. The smaller the particle size, the more oversaturation we're seeing. The capillary saturation that we achieved with these five samples, again, were over 40% in one sample, and actually one sample achieved 47%, which is right around the ideal saturation for CO2 respiration. These are actually the five soils. The photograph really doesn't do it justice, but the upper set of samples was the capillary wetting method. We've developed a new method to offset the capillary issues. We're calling it the water-filled pore space method, but as you can see, they're certainly wetter, and some of them actually pond. With the capillary method, the water remains on the surface, whereas our water-filled method, they don't saturate. This is the data from that same sample set. We're basically comparing the capillary bottom wetting method with our new water-filled pore space approach. This is the CO2 data on three replicates of each. In summary, the CO2 from the capillary bottom wetting method ended up being 34 parts per million. Same exact samples using the water-filled pore space ended up being about 61 parts per million. So it was a fairly significant difference in the wetting method relative to CO2 rate. The second study, we worked with the USDA ARS. They actually ground the same soils, coarse, medium, and unstructured. I don't actually have the particle size for each, but they took three samples, performed the analysis, and I think it's pretty obvious that the difference between the coarse and even the medium and the unstructured is fairly significant. So this reinforced our study that we were doing, that basically the grinding process, when you end up with a very small particle size, is impacting the CO2 respiration in the burst test. And we see, as you can see here, there's a 2 to 3-fold higher burst value in the coarse ground soils. Study three is actually ongoing. We've just started it. We've got some laboratory feedback. Lab one is actually the Woods End lab where Solvita is built. This is the difference between the grand mean and also the variation across labs. if you look at our lab, the difference between the capillary wetting method and the water-filled pore space basically comes back as a wash, you know, same value. We have some work to do with our laboratories to get the method very similar across the board. But even here, you can see the difference between the capillary and water-filled pore space at each of the other three, other four labs. We've got another 10 labs that are going to be providing data, which will add to and improve the chart and develop a better statistical approach. Same samples. Basically, the difference between the ground and the non-ground is pretty dramatic, especially with this t-test. And then the non-ground and the ground with the water-filled pore space, you know, really indicates that this was the water-filled pore space method is a huge improvement over the capillary method for fine-grained soils. And that's not to say that all soils that you'll see come through the laboratory are in this category, but it's important to distinguish and have another method which is accurate and reproducible. This slide should have been up front, but unfortunately it got stuck at the end. But this is our water-filled pore space wetting method. Rather than capillary attraction up from the bottom up, and basically I should describe that for those that aren't familiar. We take 40 grams of dried and ground soil, put it in a small beaker, and basically and then add 20 mils of water outside the beaker that has holes in the bottom. So capillary attraction pulls the water up to the soil core, and in the highly saturated soils, you'll actually see puddling on the surface and the core stays wet, which then depresses the respiration rate. We've developed, or Dr. Brinton has actually developed this water-filled pore space, which changes the process a bit. We take the initial 40 grams of soil in a beaker without holes in it, tamp it to reduce the bulk density, measure the bulk density. 40 grams, say, could end up being 35 cc's, and then we have a chart that shows that you only add 10 mils of water to end up with the available pore space of 19.8. So this is the new method that we're proposing for those fine-grained soils. So in conclusion, the CO2 burst test needs to be repeatable and is certainly influenced by handling and the wetting method. Unstructured soils tend to oversaturate with increased variability. That's part of the problem, which also creates the lower respiration. And then our new 50% water-filled pore space appears to correct the respiration slump and bring the CO2 respiration back in line across the board. And coarser soil preparation, we're working with labs. Obviously, labs don't want to spend more time preparing samples, and we understand that. So we're working to improve the method even further so that we can maybe go with a coarser soil preparation, which will allow us to use capillary wetting as well as the water-filled pore space without significant deviation across the board. And that should end it. I guess, any questions?
So, you did the water-filled pore space and you saw improvement, but that doesn't answer the question of what's correct. So, have you done any studies to compare the field method with the lab method?
The field method, you mean, meaning the field moist?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you can't compare the field moist method because it's field moist. You're not starting from a 0 to less than 5% moisture capability. The burst method really only works when you have a very dry soil, you're adding water, and then the microbes basically burst and respire quickly. So the two, you really can't compare the two directly because the field moisture may be 10 or 15% to start with. You add some additional water, you're not going to get that burst effect.
So what's driving the fact that we were getting
Well, we know it's wrong because the soil is visually and scientifically saturated. So if the pore spaces are saturated, we know, you know, from lots of background data and supporting data that respiration is going to drop. We call it the respiration slump. And I've seen, and I see that in the field testing as well. And that actually becomes a very useful tool, which is another topic. But we're absolutely confident that the proficiency testing, the soil particles are so small that the capillary wetting is not working there. And if you visually look at the two methods side by side, I mean, it jumps out at you. Sure. We only went as fine as the 0.5 millimeter. We actually didn't try and look smaller than that.
Fine. And what were your cores?
I think we started around 2 millimeters. And we had several. I have additional data. And actually, I have papers if anyone's interested with more of the supporting documentation for the first two studies. I mean, at the end of the day, it's critical for Solvita, which obviously offers a respiration test, to make it as accurate, reproducible, and meaningful as possible, not just for laboratories, but obviously for growers and farmers. We're looking at around 2 millimeter particle size as more practical to determine biological respiration, and obviously 0.5 is probably more ideal for chemical extraction. So we're starting to have a definite sense that we need to separate biology measurement in soil from chemistry. Yes. We've already sent those out to our affiliated labs, and we are. I can give anybody instructions, so that's not a problem.
Do you think you're getting in compaction by how hard you can think this is going to
You certainly are getting compaction, which is why you see the 40 gram to a 35 cc drop, but it's not compaction to the point where it's impeding water growth. I think I forgot to mention that contrary to the capillary attraction, which is basically water coming up by capillary attraction to the surface, the water-filled pore space method, we're actually dribbling water onto the top of the surface, and the water is migrating down to the bottom, and there's no holes for the water to get out. So there is definitely a different method of re-wetting the soil. Thank you.